You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Doctor, if I really, really would, but the feeling in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give the information, asking for more, but blood makes noise. Is it ringing in my ear? Blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good Sunday evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. And as a reminder, I know we've been beating this horse now for 3 weeks, but this is the last time you'll hear us start the show at this time. As of next week, we'll be starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific. And we wanted to give, obviously, an opportunity to people east of the Mississippi to hear the show live, not run so late, so they didn't have to depend just only on the archives. So again, the Common Sense Show, as of May 31st, will be going to a new time. We'll be airing 2 hours earlier in all time zones. And we have a great guest for that show. We have Doug Hagman on for the first 2 hours. And following up with Doug the following week, we have Steve Quayle. So we've got quite an impressive lineup. In the third hour tonight, Annie and Katie will be bringing us their usual, the health report and the news that you don't see on the mainstream media. In the second hour, we're going to have an old, familiar, and favorite guest on, Monica Wesolowski, who actually fought CPS and won. And we're going to get into child sex trafficking and all that nefarious stuff. And in the first hour, we have a very special guest. He is the head of Oath Keepers, oathkeepers.org. And I was very privileged to go up to north central Arizona in the Chino Valley yesterday, just north of Prescott, and address the Chino Valley chapter of Oath Keepers. And when fighting breaks out, I hope I'm in the room with these people, because they know what's at stake. They're serious. The questions they asked me weren't the typical questions you get from the general public. Very aware. Congratulations to Jim Arroyo and his staff up there for running such a first-rate organization. But our guest is Stuart Rhodes, and he is no stranger to most of you who have followed this show. We have talked about Oath Keepers from time to time, and we're going to talk about what this entails with regard to Jade Helm, present state of affairs, and the importance of a civilian organization being at the tip of the spear in terms of reminding the military of their constitutional oath. Stuart, welcome to the show, and thanks for being on with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, we met for dinner, three, 4 weeks ago now at a really great Mexican restaurant called Anita's up in Wickenburg, Arizona. And we had quite the conversation that evening about Jade Helm, and you were really concerned about what the military was being asked to do. Let's start there and talk to us about your feelings about Jade Helm and what you see going on.
Well, the first thing, of course, is the background. I mean, just a year ago, we had Bundy Ranch, where you had an armed confrontation between BLM and their hired contractors, which included Special Forces veterans on the one side and military veterans on the other side, many of them also XSF or Rangers or Marine Infantry, et cetera. And so a very tense stand where one shot would have sparked a massive firefight and probably would have lit off a civil war in this country. That's the close-range backdrop to this. And, of course, we also know within a month after that standoff kind of died down, you had a disclosure in the Washington Times about a DOD memo in 2010 that was issued that authorizes low-level threshold decision-making to commanders to grant military assistance, the military force, to almost any public official, state or federal, who requests it. And that same article also said, by the way, an Obama administration official, had told the reporter that the administration had considered the use of a military strike on Bundy Ranch, but it decided not to. So these are facts. That actually happened. There was, on the table, a military strike at Bundy Ranch in reaction to the standoff there. So that's incredibly important close-range backdrop. Further back from that, of course, is the NDAA 2012, which is very, very obvious detention provisions of military detention, military trial, and military force that sweep in American citizens. And before that, we have the actual practice of Obama targeting American citizens for assassination overseas. But the claim always, of course, is that citizenship's irrelevant, and whether you're overseas or not, it's irrelevant. And so they've already targeted and killed American citizens under the logic and theory of the laws of war can be used against Americans just as they are used against a foreign enemy. This is a direct violation of the treason clause in our Constitution, which requires a jury trial if you're accused of treason. So then the backdrop before that was the Bush administration detaining two American citizens here in the United States indefinitely, Jose Padilla and Yasser Hamdi, and that was rubber stamped by the Supreme Court in 2004. So now you have all three branches saying this is okay, and you have operational plans to do it here inside the United States. And, of course, we also have NORTHCOM, which was created during the Bush administration, which is for the first time a military command over the United States that contemplates using active duty troops inside the United States. And NORTHCOM, of course, coordinates with the CIA and the NSA for domestic military operations. This is all fact. So that's the backdrop. So whenever somebody says, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, this is no big deal, it's like, hey, look, this is not back in the 80s when I was in as a paratrooper where our only enemy was the Soviet Union. That's our major enemy and its satellites. It's now very clear, very plain, that they've turned all of these powers inward, and they are looking inside the United States and planning for operations inside the United States. So this is why, aside from the particulars of Jade Helm, this is why you should be concerned about any domestic exercises, because they plan to use military force inside the U.S. It's part of the planning. Now, Jade Helm itself is even more scary, because it goes into, I mean, it tracks directly with an intent to be used domestically. They're not training. Put it this way, like Rick Moon, our chapter president from Arkansas, said, who's a special forces veteran, when he was in, he always trained in an operational environment, in a training environment as close to the operational environment as possible. You match up your training to closely mirror where you're going to deploy to, and then you go do it.
Well, that's exactly right. In fact, you actually just took my next question away from me when you said that you train in the terrain that you expect to fight in. So what we see going on in Texas right now, where that's a planned battleground, that has nothing to do with the Middle East. And then we see these operations against these mock cities that are created. They have signs from the Washington, D.C. subway system, American Christian churches. There's no way that they're practicing for the Middle East. Here's what concerns me, and I raised this point yesterday at the Oath Keepers meeting that I spoke at. What have the American people done to make this administration think they need to rehearse to subjugate us?
What have we done? We've lived free.
In your mind, what do you think the justification is in their mind on why they think they got to practice dissident extraction drills, martial law enforcement? What is it that they see right now in America that is such a threat to them?
I think number one, the American veterans. Look at the demonstration at the World War II Memorial, where the veterans refused to comply with the absurd orders of the Obama administration to shut down the memorial and lock out World War II vets. They just ignored it. And then they went a step further and took the barricades to the White House and dumped them on the front lawn. And you can watch the video of the confrontation with the D.C. police and the veterans, and you can see the fear in the eyes of the D.C. police. That was a watershed moment. It really was. And then you add to that Bundy Ranch, where people came together. Veterans from across the country showed up, and they are the tip of an iceberg. For every guy who showed up, there are thousands more who would have been there if they could have gotten off of work or could make it there. So this is an indicator for them that they have not, one, they have not sufficiently cowed the American people. Two, they have not sufficiently brainwashed the military, because for every veteran standing there who just got out of the Marine Corps or the Army, their buddies back inside the services are no different. You know, so there's a serious problem they have. I think that's why, one of the reasons why they did not drop the hammer at Bundy Ranch with the military strike, is because they're probably concerned about those who are still in, who aren't much different than the veterans who showed up. And so I think what Jade Helm was part of doing is conditioning the public and the military, and also vetting the military to see who is going to play ball, who's going to go along with this kind of stuff. But I think it fits into a broader plan, and this is where I'm getting into a little bit of speculation, but my thinking and guess is that what will probably happen is there'll be an economic collapse, and in the middle of that, and during, you know, the terrorist attacks by ISIS cells or whatever, and during violence in the inner cities and race riots, in the middle of all that, then they would do a decapitation strike. And that's when they would be most likely to get away with it, because the active duty military would be so overwhelmed with the crisis of a massive economic collapse that they wouldn't be, they would be more likely to go along with it. And also less aware of the decapitation strike that's happening in the middle of it all. So that's my best guess.
When you say decapitation strike, specifically what would that entail?
It would entail going after what they consider high-value targets, those they consider to be the leadership or the most hardcore among the resistors. And, you know, one scenario that could be used, of course, would be in the middle of all of it, you know, ISIS is attacking, taking advantage of an economic collapse. But then they can say, well, the right-wing extremists are also taking advantage of it. And you can see, I could see them doing a false flag, or they blow up a few buildings, blame it on the right, and say, look, you know, they're doing the same thing ISIS is doing. We have to go after these people. And a lot of Americans would probably support that if they're being sold it.
Well, that is interesting, because that is precisely the scenario I've laid out. In the midst of an economic collapse, in the chaos, ISIS will be free to roam and carry out their terrorism, which they could attack police departments, small towns, shopping malls, schools. And you're right, in the midst of all that, that's when the hammer comes down. And, you know, I agree with you, Stuart, because another thing that people don't talk enough about is when you look at the original Jade Helm documents that have come out from the administration, they talk about the use of special operations forces. Well, what's their job? They're pre-combat units. They go in, and among what they do is they kidnap or assassinate high-value targets. There is no other reason for them to be involved in this role unless that's what's going on.
Well, they also do the snatches too. They do what they call the extract. Like, look at Mogadishu, you know, back in the Black Hawk Down incident. It was Delta going in to do the snatch, supported by the Rangers, but they were going after a warlord and his lieutenants in decapitation strike.
Yeah, that's I think what we're going to see here, unless we can turn this back. Now, when we look at Texas, I'm sure you're aware, three counties in Texas have told Jade Helm to stay out.
Right.
And the governor,
well, the
governor of Texas.
Step up.
Well, he looked like he was going to. He said, hey, we're going to follow Jade Helm into their activities. And then I started thinking, how are you even going to know what their activities are? I have it on very good authority from people that know people in Jade Helm that even the leadership doesn't know what their overall operational mission is, because it's so heavily compartmentalized. And the operating theory that we have with that, Stuart, I want to get your reaction to this, is that if these units had any idea of what they're going to be asked to do and they had time to think about it, they probably would not carry out these orders. But if they're placed in the moment of decision and they're entrapped, then they might carry out what they're told to do. What do you think about that?
Well, it's much like Katrina. The unit we know of from the National Guard of Utah that had thought about it in advance and discussed it on the ground refused to take part in a gun confiscation. But the others, if they don't think about it in advance, you're right. Under the moment of crisis, when they perceive it as a real emergency, they're much more likely to go along with it. So this is the great danger. That's why for the last 2 years we've been working our CPT program, which stands for Community Preparedness Teams, the goal of which is to have the veterans in the community lead the community in getting as prepared as possible with communications, medicine, engineering, and security to make sure they can take care of themselves, food storage, to take care of themselves and each other so that they're not desperate. Because the more desperate you are, the more likely people in the system of nature, the more likely they are to demand martial law or go along with it. And the same goes for the civilian population as well as the military. So we need to make sure that we can take care of ourselves and our communities so that we're not desperate and starving and hungry during an economic collapse.
Well, with people sitting here on the precipice of all this ready to happen, I mean, Jade Helm has announced officially, even though we know they've started their operations, they've announced officially they're starting on June 15th, a whole month earlier. What would you tell the average person listening about what they should be thinking about doing?
Well, like I just said, they should be focused on making sure that they have local security. So another way to skin this cat to look at is this. Throughout history, oppressive regimes have liked to use the secret police to get you in the middle of the night. And what did Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the famous Russian, tell us about that? He said, it's a famous quote of his, when he was in the Gulag, in the concentration camps, he said, how we burned in the camps later, wondering what if things had been different? What if instead of peeling in terror, hope in our apartments, hoping the knock would pass us by and go to our neighbors instead of doing that, being taken out one at a time, what if instead we realized we had nothing left to lose and come together and ambush secret police down in the entryway to the tenements with whatever was at hand, axes, pokers, hammers, whatever. He said, what would have happened is, despite all of Stalin's thirst for blood, the machine would have ground to a halt for lack of secret police. So the point is that if you're united as a community, the secret police cannot do it. Look at Bundy Ranch. The local Las Vegas SWAT team couldn't have done anything. There's too many veterans there. In fact, Delta Force would have had a hard time going in there. There's just too many guys who knew how to fight. So you take away the effectiveness of secret police when you organize and come together as a community. And then the oppressor has no choice but to attempt to use the standing army against you. Now look at Stalin. He never had to try to use Russian army against Russian people. He could just use secret police. Everyone was afraid to come together. So the founders showed us long ago the proper answer. They told us that we must have a militia made up of the people themselves. Every able-bodied person in the community is in the militia. And that's how they did it. That's why General Gage could not just send a dozen officers to go and arrest Hancock and Adams. He had to send an entire regiment. And when he did so, he took off the mask, took off the gloves, and it was obvious open warfare. But he got his ass kicked anyway by the militia. So, point being, in our modern context, I want them to have to try to use the Marine Corps, the whole Marine Corps. I want them to have to try to use the regular army, not just rely upon either the mercenaries and Triple Canopy or Blackwater or XC or whatever they call themselves now. They should not be able to rely only on them or special operations guys who have been well vetted and weeded out. They should force them to have to use the entire Marine Corps, the entire army, because a lot of them will side with us.
Those are interesting thoughts, because a lot of people share that sentiment, but the problem is how do we make market penetration to the degree that it's going to make a difference? In other words, how do we get the military to sit up, take notice, and give them the courage to stand up and say no, and they know the people are behind them?
Well, I think, like I said, once again, Bundy Ranch is a reflection of the reality that's already there.
Okay.
Quite a few of the veterans, I mean, the conventional wisdom years ago before this happened was, oh, Americans never stand up. Well, we showed at Bundy Ranch that they will. And so, once again, they were the tip of an iceberg. And that iceberg is not just in the civilian population now of retired military. It's also within the military itself. They're a reflection of what they just got out of. The guys inside are still the same mindset. Not all of them, but a large enough percentage that I think it gives the bad guys pause. So, and one of the look at this is that they don't want to start things off with a clear act of oppression, a military strike on a Bundy Ranch type situation. I think they probably figured correctly that they'll get more compliance with the military if there's a perception of a real emergency, like a national economic collapse or an EMP strike, and it takes out our infrastructure across the country. Under those circumstances, the military is more likely to go along with so-called, you know, quote-unquote emergency measures. That's the vehicle I think they're going to use. They essentially hit us with an economic neutron bomb that preserves the infrastructure but kills all the people, right? 6 months, even 3 months after an economic collapse, you would have mass starvation in this country, most likely. So I think that probably what they're looking for is something like that, a catastrophic event that they can use as cover and a vehicle to get more compliance from the military. And under that, in that confusion, like you said, mass terrorist attacks going on at the same time, in that confusion, then they could blame us in part for failures and project onto us what they're actually doing which is attacking the American people, and then use that to justify coming after us.
I had an interesting exchange with a Texas Ranger officer, and he told me, he said, don't look at Walmart's, Dave, as FEMA camp detentions. That's way off base. He said their logistics have been suited to match the military, and it's been that way for quite a while. And he said these closings are about supply for military operations. And I said, well, who the hell are you preparing for in Midland, Texas? And he said, ISIS. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious from the absolute, not just refusal to guard the border, but the assistance that the administration is giving to the dispersal inside the United States of unknowns from places unknown. I think it's pretty obvious that they want that to happen. They are allowing anybody who wants to infiltrate to come into the country, at the very least. For all we know, they're actually assisting them, you know, knowingly putting them in place. They're flying them all over the country. We don't know where they're going to land. We've got recent immigrant floods from Somalia, for example, and I think also there's Syria as well, that are being plugged into the heartland. And a lot of our guys are worried about that. They see this new crop of people that come in who are not assimilating and who are taking over politically in small towns in Minnesota, for example, or Nebraska. So I think all of that is part of the destabilization campaign against the United States.
You are so correct. And not only are they putting groups like 9,000 Syrians in Idaho, according to the press releases, the FBI says they don't have time to vet them. This is craziness. This is national suicide that we would allow people in from that region and not even put them through any kind of security screening, but we have to go through TSA when we fly and get felt up by the TSA administrative operatives. So it's absolutely nuts. Well, Stuart, we're going to step aside for a break here in just a moment. When we come back, I want to talk about some Oath Keeper plans, what you're implementing. I know that these desperate times have really forced you guys to take a look at services that you should be offering and activities you should be engaged in. So we're going to hit this on the other side. We're going to step aside for a quick break. And we come back, we'll continue with Stuart Rhodes. I want to tell you about our newest advertiser, and that is Steve Quayle and his precious metals organization called Renaissance Precious Metals. And they're your trusted source for buying gold and have been for 34 years. Steve is a famous, as you know, author, radio talk show host. He'll be a guest here on this show in 2 weeks. And those who've listened to Steve's advice about getting into gold and silver and ditching their reliance on paper currency have really created a hedge against inflation. And when the economy collapses, gold and silver will be the universally accepted standard bearers of wealth. So it just makes good common sense to make this switch. And for the listeners of the Common Sense Show, Steve is offering free overnight shipping. Yes, that's free overnight shipping. And I should remind you that when it comes to gold and silver, if you can't touch it, you don't own it. So call Steve tomorrow at 406-586-4842. Again, get that number down, 406-586-4842. And if you didn't get a chance to get that number down, just visit my website at thecommonsenseshow.com and Steve's ads on the left-hand side. Click it, and all the information you need to make this wise choice will be there. Well, our special guest is Stuart Rhodes. And Stuart is the head of Oath Keepers. It's an organization that I have a great deal of respect for because they're our front line of defense against the military turning on the American people. So, Stuart, I know that you guys are looking at a lot of new initiatives, have a lot of plans in the works. Tell us what you can talk about.
Well, one thing I think is critical right now in light of all of this, this is a fourth-generation full-spectrum assault on America. It's economic, it's political, it's military, it's psychological. And the biggest driving force on their side is fear, the fear of the American people. And so what I want to see, what we have to see, is the veterans must take lead. I didn't say Oath Keepers, I mean veterans. All of them must take lead in stepping up and calling it what it is. So what I want to see happen is veterans summits in every state where the veterans come together and talk about the security threats to the United States, the full spectrum of what they are. Lay it on the table. Lay out Jade Home for what we know so far and talk and plan what we are going to do about it. And I encourage them when they do this, this is what we hope to do, what's what we're going to do in each state, is what I want to see happen is in that meeting, they divide up state into four quadrants or whatever makes sense to them. And then they go sit together. Those are each quadrant. Go sit together, become a team right there. But when they go back to their area of the state, they act as a team to wake up the other veterans and then bring in all the dedicated patriots in their community under their leadership and then get ready, okay? Get ready for whatever's going to come. It doesn't matter whether ICE, 13, the secret police, you know, Delta Force, whoever it is, it's going to come to your door. The answer is the same. You must come together as a community, as the founders, as the founding fathers told us had to be done, as is necessary for security of a free state. And we must get ready. And that includes food storage. You can't fight if you're starved to death. So we're going to have, in this country we used to have 3 years of grain reserve, right, during the Cold War, a strategic grain reserve. We have no longer have anything like that. So what we have to have is that the veterans take the lead in each region of the state to create that reserve, along with medical, emergency medicine, emergency communications, engineering, and safe, clean water and power, things like that, and most important of all, security. Have to have security. So when ISIS comes knocking, or MS-13, whoever it is, in your neighborhood, they get a reaction they're not expecting, which is all of you united together.
That's is that part of the security discussions that Oath Keepers are now having within their organizations, that they're organizing in their local communities?
Well, I'm here right now in Josephine County, Oregon, where we just had successful defense of the miners and their due process rights. A judge has just issued a stay order against the BLM going back into the mine until they have the day in court, until they're hearing it. So this is a, you know, it's a minor victory, but it's still a victory. But here, from across the country, yet again, you had veterans and also non-veterans, average patriotic Americans who showed up here to defend the constitutional rights of these miners. And so we are having some serious discussions here among all of us who come from different parts of the country about what needs to happen back home. And so I'm sending all of them home with a mission of taking the lead and calling for these veteran summits. So, yes. And also, we haven't had a couple truckers here, and we are now forming a trucker division within Oath Keepers. And even more importantly, we're going to put together a hotline or tip system for truckers to use across the country, whether they're members of Oath Keepers or not, just to give them a chance to sound off on what they see on the highways. And we're going to teach them how to do that right.
That's music to my ears. We're speaking with Stuart Rhodes, the head of Oath Keepers. Their website is oathkeepers.org. They have membership available that you can link into from the About page. And I encourage everyone after the show to head right up there. And they allow people who are veterans, former law enforcement, former veterans to sign up, as well as the general public, people who have an interest in protecting and defending the Constitution. Stuart, I've received communication from something that I've actually written about before. The communication came covertly to me from a lieutenant general. I am aware of his identity from my sources. I think his information is good. I wanted to get your general reaction to what he said, the highlights of what he said. He said that when the orders come down, if Jade Helm were to go live, he believes 90% of the Marine Corps will side with the people, 60% of the Army and the National Guard will support the people, but he believes 75% of the Air Force will side against the people and with the government, and the Navy will maintain defensive posture to prevent foreign incursion to take advantage of any civil unrest. What do you think about that?
Well, I have no way to substantiate it directly, but it kind of tracks with what we've seen in the outreach to the current serving. If I had to pick, and I'm an ex-Army guy, but if I had to pick one branch, if I took one branch that was going to stand up firm, I would say probably the Marine Corps. They're going to stand up as a branch. Now, I think that the qualifier there is also among the infantry in the Army who are like airborne infantry and more specialized and they're more elite, I think you're going to get a higher percentage of them as well, because they don't join just for a job. they join, like most Marines, they join because dad was a Marine or uncle was a Marine and grandpa was a Marine, you know, and or they join out of patriotism. Same goes for Army Airborne. So I think that's probably pretty accurate with that caveat. I'd say about, when it comes to Army Airborne, it's also a very high percentage. But it depends upon what's going on. If there's a catastrophic collapse, if there's terrorist attacks going on all over the place, more of them will side with whatever the agenda is if they believe it's a legitimate crisis. This is the problem and the great danger. So we have to do something to throw a monkey wrench into that plan.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, and the way that we do it is just keep beating the drum louder and louder. What plans do you have to expand the reach and influence of Oath Keepers in terms of attracting more members?
Well, my focus is not membership. It's not even Oath Keepers. The whole point is to organize our communities. My dream would be to have every VFW get off its butt, get off the bar stool, and get going. They already have men. They already have officers. They have buildings. They have money, but they're not doing hardly anything with it. So let's set aside membership. It's not about that. I want to see the veterans stand up. Why is it that in Texas, why is it the ranchers down there are begging for people to come guard their ranch against the cartels, and they have to bring guys in from Illinois and Indiana to go help them guard their ranches? Where the heck are all the Texans at? You know, right here in Oregon, why do we have to have veterans come across the country coming here, and non-veterans also, to guard one mine? The people of Oregon should have that handled. So there are a lot of veterans out there who aren't doing their duty, and a lot of Americans that aren't doing their duty. So that's what we want to see happen. We're going to lead by example, but the real answer is for them to stand up as Americans. Doesn't matter if they're 3%ers, Oath Keepers, Tea Party, whatever they call themselves, who cares? What counts is that they stand up and do what's right, and do it as a community together.
My fear is before the rollout of martial law and the incidents that could provoke this, that we will see a decided show of force against people who stand up at places like Bundy Ranch. Has that been discussed among your membership? And if so, what kind of contingency plans do you have?
Well, if it would have happened at Bundy Ranch, then it would have sparked a civil war in this country. There's no doubt about that. So it is, you know, it's our sense of it is that duty is ours and results are God's. We don't worry about the outcome. We just know, we just focus on what's right, and we don't let our fear control us. And that's critical. Of course, we're all afraid. Everyone feels fear to one degree or another. But it's whether or not you let your fear control you that matters. And so, I think we have to focus on not us and not our own skin, but our children and our grandchildren.
Well, I agree with the community defense, the community awareness, because if we go into civil war, let me just share with you what my military sources tell me. If we go into civil war and a significant amount of the military shift sides, and they are fulfilling their oath-keeping duty to their constitutional oath, that this will degenerate into a civil war that could go on for years, and it'll be terrible. As one military source told me, he said it'll be city to city, street to street. It'll get personal. He said you'll see the killing of people accused of being terrorists by the government as well as their families, and then there'll be reprisals. And he says it'll be a never-ending Vietnam kind of situation. How does that jive with what you see coming when the sparks fly?
Well, as I said, if you can unite as a community, you'll get more of the active duty to come to your side, because it'll first have guys that won't be able to use secret police. We'll have to try to use a standing army on you. But it also depends upon you being so prepared in your local communities that you're not desperate and hungry. And I think food, or the lack of food, is the greatest weapon and the greatest Achilles heel in the people of America. They hardly have any food storage. And so you got plenty of guns, plenty of ammo, but nowhere near enough food. That's a great weakness of the preparedness movement and the American people. So I think the most important thing to focus on is, one, community security, take away the effectiveness of the secret police, to community food storage. Those are the two most important things.
How much food do you recommend that people store?
2 years.
Okay.
I mean, we used to have 3 years. During the Cold War, when anticipation was a nuclear strike would wipe out farming in America, it was anticipated it would take at least 3 years to resurrect the ability to grow food. So I think we should plan for at least two, if not three. Imagine an EMP strike, you know?
Yeah.
What that would do to our infrastructure.
I don't think we're going to see an EMP strike. A power grid down, maybe. But I don't think we'll see an EMP strike because China will never allow it. And they own too much of this country. And I don't really see that in our future. But I do see them cutting the grid. If they, for example, they declared Texas and Utah and part of Southern California to be hostile states in Jade Helm. I do see them cutting power and services to selected communities that aren't cooperating with the powers that be. I think there's no question about that.
Right. You should expect that, absolutely.
Yeah, this is just a nightmare scenario beyond belief because, Stuart, there is one way out of the debt, but it would take a civil war to get there because we could simply say, we're not paying your credit swap derivatives debt of $1.5 quadrillion,
right.
And these other debts, we're not paying those either. But you know what? The establishment will fight on behalf of the bankers. Don't you agree with that?
Well, that's the whole point of this is that why not blame an economic collapse on the Chinese or the Russians or some terrorist
right.
attack and instead of the bankers who are responsible? You could say, well, the answer is we need to have a national Federal Reserve in the World Bank. That'll be the answer. So, yes, I think they're going to, that's obviously side with the bankers. That's what they're setting up is a cover for an economic collapse that's now a foregone conclusion. The dollar is going to die. They know it. But they don't want to blame the bankers. They want to blame anybody but. So the question is who will the fall guy be?
Has there been any discussion among Oath Keepers about discouraging people from joining the military? And let me preface it by saying this. I actually had someone that I knew, family friend, whose child had grown up always wanting to be in the military. And when it came time, he had developed enough awareness where he said, they'll send me to Afghanistan for 3 or 4 tours. I'll get PTSD. I'll come back here. They'll treat me like crap and then try to steal my gun from me. What's Oath Keepers feeling on this generally?
Well, I'll tell you what. I know several Oath Keepers whose sons enrolled and enlisted in the Army or the Marine Corps for the particular purpose of getting training. So exactly the opposite view is go get the training and experience and bring it back home.
Interesting. And for the purposes of real national defense, not
right.
serving the goals of the bankers. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. And also we know that there are plenty of returning veterans who've been woken up to what's going on, and they feel convicted. This is why.
I asked my military sources, when did you realize that things were really going south? And almost to a person, they said under the Clinton administration. That's when I said there was a big awakening among a lot of people.
I'm hearing from guys that got out, it's also what they saw in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
What they see in
okay.
the Middle East right now.
Yeah, well, when you're over there and people are dying to protect drug trafficking, I think that would be a huge impediment to military morale. I think there's no question about that.
Absolutely.
I do think, though, you know, and what you're saying to me is noble. You need to focus on community defense, but we also need the pounding feet of marching boots. I really think Oath Keepers ought to be really looking at trying to attract as many people into the organization for the express purpose of tell the military what their duty is, remind them, tell them what's going on, educate them as to the New World Order and all the nefarious
right.
stuff. I mean, when you said to me that you weren't really focused on membership, I guess I would ask, you know, why not? Because we need numbers to spread the word.
Yeah, well, it's not just about organization. It's about it's about the veterans getting off their butts and
yeah.
taking the lead. Whether they're in my organization or any other organization, what's it matter? As long as they do it.
Okay.
So in direct response to Jade Helm, what we're also going to do is we're going to have a billboard campaign outside the base of each unit that's involved and boots on the ground, preferably guys who are from that unit or who were stationed at that post, like Fort Bragg, for example, stationed there. So I'll go there and stand with other veterans who were stationed at Fort Bragg and stand outside the gate and talk to the guys on the way in, eye to eye. Part of the message is don't do that, don't go there. because it's right not to. And the other part of the message is, if you go there, you're going to be fighting us. So I think they need to hear that. It's time to just, you know, call what it is.
That is amazing. What kind of resistance do you think you're going to get when you approach the base perimeter and you're carrying out those activities?
Well, we're going to go on the base. We're going to stand outside on the way in. You know,
right.
You have free speech on the sidewalk, at least up till now. So we'll see how it goes. You know, and there's other ways to do that, too. You can go and the guys who are local can just go hang out in the bars where the veterans hang out, where the current serving hang out, and just talk to them. You know, quite a few of them still know guys are still in. So we're just going to push our network as far as we can into the current serving with that overt message. Look, guys, here's why we're concerned about Jay at Helm. Here are the facts, like I laid out earlier. These are facts. You can't avoid them. And here's where our best assessment of where this points to. Talking about how the dollar is already losing reserve status around the world. Other countries are already decoupling from it. The end of the dollar is nigh. I don't know how long it'll last, but it's coming pretty quickly. So these are also facts. It won't last much longer. So and in the context of that, we can talk about the things we've seen on the border, whether it's, you know, Fast and Furious, arming the cartels intentionally, completely exposed. They knew about ISIS camps and whatnot and radical camp across the border long before the summer. So they knew before this. We did nothing about it. Why not? You know, why do you have paid agitators going into Ferguson, Missouri and Baltimore trying to maximize the racial division and tension and the violence? Why?
Did you see who was
calling the shots?
Yeah, well, it is going on. It's going on there. It's going on in Baltimore. And did you see where some of these plants were demanding that they be paid, and they hadn't been paid yet?
Right.
Amazing. Yeah. And yet America just sleeps right along. If you were to make a wild guess, how much penetration do people like you and I have into the American public? How many are really paying attention to some degree about what we're finding and what we're saying?
I'd say actively, really switched on, about 20%.
That's pretty high. There is
maybe I'm dealing with a select sample of folks who are more aware. I don't know. But you can look at the support for Congressman Ron Paul as a dictator. He had pretty broad support. You know, they had to stop him through all kinds of mechanisms to stop his message from getting out. But I think he had look at the reaction among the young people of America to his two campaigns. So
no, that's a good point. But when you say 20%, I'm really encouraged, because there is socio-psychological research out there that says when you have 10% of people committed to an ideal, the trend becomes a fad, becomes an epidemic.
Here's a barometer for you. Right here, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. A good barometer is right here in Grants Pass, Oregon. They had a massive parade yesterday. And in that parade, we had a float. Oath Keepers was in the parade. And the support from the crowd, it was a pretty large parade, was overwhelmingly positive. Thumbs up, people cheering for us, shaking our hands. So very, very broad support here for what the miners have done and what the Oath Keeper chapter here has done in support of the miners.
How much is that miners' dispute being covered in the media there, the mainstream media, and how fair is the coverage?
Oh, it's absolutely horrible coverage. It's being covered broadly here in Oregon, which is what's interesting, is despite all the very negative, you know, slander and propaganda by the media against the miners and the Oath Keepers here and the others who volunteer, despite all of that, the public is still overwhelmingly on their side, on the side of the miners. You see it in the comments on the articles. We saw it yesterday in person in the parade. You know, the propaganda is not working. That's what's interesting.
Because when you said that the people cheered your float, that's really encouraging. And Oregon, like Colorado, is a bastion of New World Order implementation of Agenda 21 policies. I mean, they don't let you trap rainwater. They want to implant a chip in your car registration to fine you when you're speeding and charge you how much you drive by the mile. Oregon's at the tip of the spear of this, Stuart. And yet, it's interesting they'd respond so favorably to your float. So that is very, very good news.
Well, it's a world community, with the caveat to that. This is not Portland. You know, so
that's
keep that in mind.
Good point, yeah. Yeah, they have things locked up in Portland, but even then, I have a lot of readers and a lot of listeners that come from the Portland area, and they're disgusted by what's happening. But you're right, liberalism is alive and well there. Well, tell me a little bit more about, you mentioned earlier about the Trucker Intelligence Program. Exactly how does that work, and how are you going to use that information?
Well, what we're looking for, we're still ironing out the bugs, but are the details, but we're looking for is an easy way for truckers, who they're on the road anyway, an easy way for them to let us know what they see. And we're still working on that, but it is coming. And it'll be launched within the next couple of weeks, officially. And what we'll do with that information then is pass it to our people who are trained in intelligence to try to sort it and then expose it. Let the American people know about it. But it has to be well vetted, obviously. You get so much chatter and so much rumor out there, and you and I talk in person about things that I have heard that I cannot confirm directly, so I can't disseminate them. So we're hoping that we can work out a way to confirm and then disseminate confirmed information, not just simply confirm scuttlebutt.
Yeah, you know what we need to do? We need to pool our resources, buy a 100,000-watt station, and blast this. And I've actually been looking, and I might float this idea out there even more, that several of us who are involved in this movement should think about pooling some of our resources to do just such a thing.
It couldn't hurt. It could not hurt. But as we talked about over dinner, what's really needed are whistleblowers who are willing to go on the record, on camera, or on audio, and expose what they know. That's the most credible way to expose it.
That's true. I have to confess, I've lost patience with people who will send me pictures of the Midland Walmart and the military vehicles outside, but don't use my name. And I'm thinking, they've invaded your community. They're occupying your community. There are UN vehicles in some of these places, Stuart, and people are afraid to stand up and be counted.
What are they setting themselves for? To do what? Bend the knee? So, you know, they need to lend their name to it and say, here I am. So it has maximum credibility, and it cannot be denied. Especially those in current serving military, in particular, who know of any smoking gun plans or intent, they need to expose it.
Well, 3 weeks ago on this show, I interviewed Special Operations Officer Scott Bennett. I interviewed him as a guest host on a Colorado radio station last Thursday, and both times we encountered significant broadcast interference. In fact, on this show, every avenue that people can listen to, and we have about a half a dozen, all of them are taken down except listen by phone. Along those lines, what kind of interference are you experiencing when you bump up against their nerves?
Well, we do a lot of our stuff in local communities, decentralized, not so much, you know, that kind of thing, or broadcast. It's on the ground. What we have seen here are contractors. They've obviously hired contractors. We suspect from Triple Canopy, one of our guys, a Marine Corps veteran from South Carolina, directly confronted one of these contractors. And so, you know, we saw them yesterday at the parade. At least six of them were there. So what we want to do now is we're going to take photographs of them and then put them up. And we've done it already with the one we encountered the other day at the public meeting. Put them online and say, identify this person. You know, and that's one way of fighting back, is to identify them. They operate in secrecy, though they think they do.
Yes.
So why not expose them?
Well, Stuart, I want to thank you for joining us. Oath Keepers has my undying respect and admiration. And every chance we get an opportunity to promote what you guys are doing, we're happy to do so. And you have an open invitation to come back anytime.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate that very much.
Okay. Thank you, Stuart. Stuart Rhodes from oathkeepers.org. And I'd encourage you to follow their good work. And again, my sincere thanks to the good people up in northern Arizona, north central Arizona, in Chino Valley, who they have a really active chapter. I'm very impressed with their organization, their numbers, and their level of expressed intelligence on current events. Had a wonderful experience up there. Annie, let me bring you into this.
Yes.
Yeah, we got just about a minute here before we go to break, but I just wanted to share with you and get your reaction to this. For my money, Oath Keepers is the most important civilian organization in the country right now because they have the ability to reach out to people who would enslave us. What's your reaction to Oath Keepers?
Oh, yeah. To me, there's like liberty, everything that the United States used to stand for. When people had guts, when people would stand up and fight for what's right, that's what they're doing, and that's what we're lacking in the general public. We absolutely don't have it in our government, in our schools, in our institutions. It's just lay over and be like a dead bug. You know, at least we've got the Oath Keepers. If we didn't have them, I don't think I would have much hope at all.
Yeah, I agree, because if we have to mount civilian defense to either a foreign invasion or some kind of tyrannical overhaul of this country by the establishment, and I don't mean the government necessarily, I mean the establishment, Oath Keepers is going to be at the tip of the spear for doing such a thing. I think there's no question. Anyway, I want to take this moment to just remind everybody that this will be the last time that you hear this broadcast at this particular time. We're moving to a new time next week, and our guest will be Doug Hagman. We'll be on at 8 p.m. Eastern. That's 7 Central, 6 Mountain, and 5 Pacific. And we thought that gave us a chance to reach the majority of the country on Sunday evening. We were getting a lot of complaints about how late the show ended on the East Coast, and we concur with that. We heard you, and we have made that adjustment. Also, during the upcoming break, I would encourage you to go up to the website at thecommonsenseshow.com. Sign up for our newsletter. We had over 4,000 people sign up in the first month, and we're hoping to more than double that here in the second month, and we hope that we'll get about 30 to 40,000 by the end of the year so we can spread the word. But we may not have until the end of the year before things spiral out of control. The Jade Helm people, well, that's another topic for our open news in the last half hour. Anyway, thanks for listening to this particular segment. We'll be back in hour number two with my friend Monica Wesolowski. Stay tuned, everybody.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are a holistic and natural way to get your body's pH levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your body rid itself of harmful waste, and even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy? Now buy two bottles of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops and get $10 off your order. Visit AlkaVision.com or call 800-518-7615. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds. Open the door to greater health, vitality, and zest for life. Alkalize your body. 7615 or head to AlkaVision.com.